Welcome to Dave and Bruce Plus. It's week one, baby. It's really good to have you here. Thank God we got football starting in earnest with a Thursday nighter. We even get a Friday nighter. We get a Saturday of college football once again, and then the main entree gets served on Sunday. We're going to be talking 49ers and Seahawks with a Seattle insider of the first degree. Can't get better than Mike Salk, and we've got him coming on the show today. But first, we want to welcome everyone here. Please hit like and subscribe. It helps the algorithm push this live stream across all the interwebs. So thank you very, very much. Thank you to Ike's, our main sponsor of Ike's Sandwiches. I don't know what you got for lunch coming up today, but make it a sandwich from Ike's. You'll be very happy that you did. My man's got something delicious just waiting for you at one of 100 locations, and it's growing at all times, baby. Get yourself to Ike's. You'll be happy that you did. Our good friends at the Dubliner West Portal are always helping us get things done. Our next Plus Mania meetup is going to be on October 4th. That is the Saturday after the 49ers-Rams game at the Dubliner West Portal. We hope to see you there. We're going to have a DJ spinning some vinyl. We're going to have an awful lot of fun on a day we don't have to worry about the 49ers winning or losing because they will have already played the Rams. So that is October 4th. We're starting it at 4:20, just so everybody can remember the starting time. Everybody knows 4:20. And what I need you to know, what I want you to know, is our good friends at Sleeper are now a huge sponsor here of Damon Bruce Plus. Sleeper is the best way to experience and connect over sports together. It's a one-stop shop for all your sports needs. You can celebrate. You can chat during games with other users. Get the latest on scores, news, and alerts. You go ahead, those Sleeper picks, the real-time money product that connects friends over picks. You choose 2 to 8 of your favorite players, pregame, live, events across different sports. You can mix and match your own parlay and have an awful lot of fun at Sleeper. You can even get up to 100x in your payouts. Share with friends, get rewarded together, but most importantly, use promo code Damon at Sleeper and get 100% match up to $100. You can click on the link in the description of this video. Terms and conditions apply. And as always, make sure you do these sorts of things responsibly. So thanks to Ike's, thanks to the Dubliner West Portal, thanks to Sleeper, and thank you to you for being here. The last man we need to thank today is our guest, Mike Salk, who is the king up in Seattle, host of the Brock and Salk show, the biggest morning show there is. And it is good to see you, Mike. It's been a few years since we've connected.
I know it's been a while, but I just like sitting here listening to all your sponsors. I can see the success you're having with all of the sponsors jumping on board. I love it.
Well, you know, for 25 cents each, I'm going to make 75 cents today. So it's going to be fantastic. But thank you very much, Mike. It grows. We're on our way to 50,000 subs. We want to be there by the bye week. So here we go. And I know the kind of information you're about to give us is going to help get us there. So thank you for joining us. First of all, how you doing? How is life? How's the radio business? How is Brock and Salk doing in the mornings up in Seattle?
You know what? It's great. It's a good time to be on the air in Seattle. I'll tell you that. It's been 16 and a half years for me and Brock now on the air. With a couple little, you know, fits and spurts and time off in between. But we're still having fun. We just like talking to each other. Heck, we would do it even if we didn't have a radio show. We just talk to each other about sports. So we love it. The Mariners are doing what the Mariners do, which was, you know, finding a way to come apart here in September. And the Seahawks are, man, I don't know. I know that's what you're going to ask me about, and I want to give you like a good, solid answer. I don't know exactly what the Seahawks are going to be. It's year two of Mike McDonald. It's year one of Sam Darnold. There's a lot about this team I like, to be honest, and there's a few things about this team that are big, gigantic question marks that I think I'd be lying if I said I felt really good about it right now. So could the Seahawks go, I don't know, 7-10? Yeah, they could. I don't think they would be worse than that. Could they go 10-7? Yeah, I think they could. Maybe better than that, but it would take a lot of things falling in the right spot.
It's funny. I mean, there's never a sure thing in football. And I'm not saying that the 49ers or Rams are sure things, but two of the, hey man, this fork in the road could bring us in one of two directions are the other two teams in the NFC West. I think that, you know, sky's the limit or top five pick could be a great way to describe the Seahawks. I think it's a great way to describe the Arizona Cardinals as well. I have no idea. I wouldn't want to be in the Arizona Cardinals prediction business because I got no idea what kind of season they're about.
Yeah, I don't know. It's funny not to get off topic, but I just look at the Cardinals and say bad ownership is never going to lead to much of anything. And a quarterback that I just don't have any faith in. He's not accurate. I don't like Kyler Murray as a quarterback. I'm kind of out. So for me, the Cardinals always become a non-factor, and if they choose to be good for a year, fine. But I don't know. I don't really put them in the same category. The Seahawks have good ownership. They got a good head coach. They got a good general manager. Like they kind of have a lot of those big pieces in place that allow an organization to at least have alignment. I don't know whether they're going to be great. We'll find out whether Sam Darnold, you know, exactly what he's going to be this year, and I'm sure we'll talk about that. But like, they're not going to be bad because they have a good ownership. They have a good coach. Heck, we haven't seen the Seahawks win fewer than 7 games since Jim Mora Jr. was their coach in 2009. I mean, like, okay. It's been that long. Pete always won at least 7 games. Mike's, you know, won 9-8 last year. So I don't know. It would surprise me if they were bad. What they need to overcome is an offensive line that for the last few years has been a mess. They think they've done that with one first round pick and some changes in scheme and coaching, which to me is a nerve-wracking experience, right? How often does coaching change really change an offensive line that's been a problem for close to a decade? It's almost unheard of. I will say in the preseason, for whatever it's worth, the offensive line looked really good. If they continue that, and that is a real thing into this season, their running game will be good and their passing game will be good because of it. So that's kind of it. Like, the defense probably going to be good. Like,
I mean, I know that you're hoping that Gray Zabel is your Dominic Pooney this year, and he really helps rebuild that offensive line. I think there is a fascinating A-gap battle coming up in week one between, you know, Seattle's rookie guard and a handful of rookies that the 49ers have across their defensive front now, how they're going to be played, how many snaps, who's starting. We'll see how it all folds out. But eventually we're going to have some rookie on rookie action right in the middle of the line of scrimmage for both of these teams. Let me just ask you this, Mike. You know, you are installing the 49ers game plan to beat the Seahawks. How are you going about beating the Seahawks?
Yeah, it's a good question. I'm going to force Sam Darnold to throw, and I kind of want to get them into, you know, yardage situations where they can't run the ball. That's what they want to do. I mean, they want to build their offense with the running game. They're actually committed to it. We'll see if that lasts. Plenty of coaches say they're committed to the run, but I have a what's become known here as the Salk Edict. Or Salk doctrine. It says you can't run the ball if you don't run the ball. It's very complex.
Let me get inside your thought pattern.
Yeah.
I think I get it.
You can't run the ball if you don't call running plays. And it's amazing how many coaches say, oh, we're going to establish the run. We're going to run the ball. And then they call 3 straight passing gate plays to start the game. And you're like, hey, man, you can't run the ball if you don't run the ball. What are you talking about? They seem to be pretty committed to it. So if I'm the Niners, I'm stacking the box early and trying to force this team to make a mistake. Maybe it's a 2-yard loss. Maybe Ken Walker gets greedy and you're able to force him outside and bottle him up. Maybe it's a holding penalty and now they're behind the sticks and they don't have a lot of explosive anything on the outside. I mean, they let DK Metcalf go. They traded him away, a move that I thought was absolutely the right thing to do. But without DK, you know, you're looking at a couple of slot receivers primarily and JSN and Cooper Kupp and then some rookies and more blocking wide receivers after that. So the game plan here, at least defensively for the Niners, I would think, is just force them into long down and distance. And you should be able to put a lot of pressure on them at that point.
So when it comes to running the ball, first of all, because what is it? It's his third year in the league. I've heard his name, but Charbonnet. Help me. Give me the pronunciation guide.
Charbonnet.
Thank you very much. That's what I thought. Yeah. We're not French. So Charbonnet, Kenneth Walker III. Who is your starting running back?
We've been debating it. I think it's Charbonnet for exactly the reason I just described. Both guys were second round picks. Ken Walker is more explosive. Charbonnet is bigger, more physical, more sturdy. Walker's been hurt a lot, which I think has been a problem. I just look at the offense and say, if I'm trying to make sure I'm not in third and 12, who do I want running the ball? I want Zach Charbonnet, who's going to chew up 2, 3, 4 yards a carry, as opposed to the guy who might get 15, but also might get -5. And my guess is, especially with Walker being hurt quite a bit throughout the offseason, we're going to see Charbonnet start, but that doesn't mean you're not going to see Walker. My guess is it is a bit of a 60-40 split or 70-30 or something like that. But we don't know. I mean, like, it's entirely possible that the whole thing is a head fake, and on game one, maybe we'll see Ken Walker. My gut tells me it's probably going to be more Charbonnet.
When it comes to the strength of this team's defense, is it still the secondary? We know this isn't the Legion of Boom anymore, but is that still the strength of this defense right now?
I think if I were to, I think the strength of this defense is A, Mike McDonald and his ability to scheme. I mean, that's why he was brought in here. He is the defensive coordinator in addition to the head coach. And Brock likes to call him a disruptor. I think it's a good way of looking at it. A guy who comes into a business, and in this division, you know, with Shanahan and with everything the Rams have going on as well, with McVay, you've got to have somebody who does it differently on defense, because they were kicking Pete's butt up and down and really had gotten to Pete's defense. And so enter Mike McDonald with a completely different scheme. He's had an ability to get more out of guys, right? This whole illusion of complexity thing where you're trying to keep it simple enough for your own guys, but make it appear very complex for the offense. I think he's been great at it. The belief here is that they should have a top five defense this season. And it's funny, they don't have a lot of stars. There's not one unit I'd point to and say, okay, that's the reason why. Is the secondary good? Yeah, it's good. And Witherspoon's a good player. And Reek Woolen, when he's covering, is a good player. And they get some good safeties. And we'll see what Eamon Worry is. He's a physical freak. The defensive line is good. Leonard Williams is a really good, underrated player. But, you know, he's not Aaron Donald. Like, he's a good player. He's not an incredible player. And you could kind of go up and around, like, the defensive ends. They're good. Boy, Mafe's good. Hall's good. None of them are great. But there's also not a lot of real weakness. So I think they're one of those defenses where the strength is in the whole package. But, yeah, as I'm telling you all of that, I think it's indicative of the fact that I don't have a great answer. What's the strength? I don't really know, right? They're all good, but there's no great there. And so I think that's one of the reasons I say, like, 7-10 to 10-7, all of those things are kind of possible.
Mike Salk, the King of Seattle, joining us here on Dame and Bruce Plus. And look, man, how sold are you about being in the Sam Darnold business? Because if you ask me where it unravels, it's at Sam Darnold's storefront. I like the guy. His teammates like him. Yep. I think he got to hide behind Kyle Shanahan, and that's a great place to be hidden as a quarterback, because everyone just talks about what good hands you're in and how you're being developed the right way, and Shanahan's good for quarterbacks. He goes to Minnesota. I think Justin Jefferson would make me a halfway decent NFL quarterback, at least, you know, create the illusion of which for a minute. And Sam had a nice season, but when it came time to reinvest or move on, the Vikings moved on. Seattle decides we're in the Sam Darnold business. Are you excited about being in the Sam Darnold business? I urge you to exercise a little caution.
I don't know if they're in the Sam Darnold business, though. I think that's kind of a misnomer a little bit. You know, what did they do? They had Geno Smith and DK Metcalf. Happiest day of my last year was the day they traded both of those two guys. I wanted no more part of them. Why? I'd been talking about it for a while because Geno's not that good. Because Geno's kind of a head case. He's not that good. He's okay. He's a good enough quarterback who would never want a playoff game. And he was, you know, he was a pain in the butt. And he's getting into fights on the sideline with the players. And he's just not a great leader. And we heard a lot of stuff behind the scenes about it. And DK, look, I like a good wide receiver as much as anyone else. But the best wide receivers, the highest paid wide receivers, they almost never win Super Bowls. And you can't tell me you want to be a physical football team and a complementary football team and a balanced football team and then pay your wide receiver a ton of money. It just doesn't work.
And so I like, he was the right guy to even pay. Like DK Metcalf,
and that too.
It was a hell of a go route, but what else?
100%. He doesn't have great hands. And so I really loved both of those decisions. Now you got to go out and make them pay off, right? So did they get into the Sam Darnold business? Yes, for a year. I mean, it's essentially a one-year deal that they can get out of after this season if they want to. So if he's good, great. You got him for a couple of years, and there's some signs that he's been good. And look, we did watch Geno Smith go from a guy that everyone thought was complete trash to being a serviceable, or some people would say good, NFL quarterback for a few years. So I think there's some open-mindedness here in Seattle that, hey, maybe this is another guy like Geno or like Rich Gannon who figures it out a little bit later in his career. And he was a top five pick just a few years ago who had the misfortune of being with the Jets, which is not exactly the best way to develop a quarterback. Right.
We're not going
to
hold that against anybody.
Right. So, and you're right. His teammates do love him. And that is a big difference, I think, from what we saw with Geno for the last few years where there was always a little bit of friction. I don't think they're counting on Sam Darnold to be their savior. Their hope is they can run the ball and play great defense, and Sam is only being asked to, you know, play action passes and not do a tremendous amount, what some people would call a game manager, and they say that more derisively. I don't, partly because I was, you know, in New England when Tom Brady was being called the game manager in the early 2000s, and it seemed to result in Super Bowl after Super Bowl because he just didn't turn the ball over and did what the system called him on him to do. I've never been a big Darnold fan, even going back to USC. I think he fumbles too much, which drives me crazy. I prefer a quarterback with a little bit more run to his game. He's not like he can't run at all, but he's not a runner, and I would prefer one. But how do I feel about being in the Sam Darnold business? I'm okay sampling it. If it doesn't work, I'm a little more excited to be in the Jalen Milroe business and at least see what that looks like.
Are you expecting at any point in time this season an element of, I don't know, regret or maybe seller's remorse on Pete Carroll and Geno putting together something good in Las Vegas? Do you think that there will be any haunting of the restarts of their careers and thinking, hey, we had that here and we walked away from it? Uh-oh, Mike, where'd you go? I was interested in hearing about the...
Hold on, I'm back. Oh, sorry.
He's back, yep. Folks.
That was my fault.
King of Seattle over here. Any fear
of
seller's remorse on either Pete or Geno?
Definitely not on Pete. I love Pete. I'm still in touch with Pete every now and again. He came on our show just a couple of months ago now. I mean, like, I love Pete. We talk to him every week for over a decade. It was time, and I say that with love, not because Pete was doing a bad job. It was just time. Yeah. It had been too long, and things were starting to get away from him, and you know, there's only so many times you can give the same message, and it was time for something new, and I have no problems with that. I wish Pete tons of success in Las Vegas. I'll be rooting for him. I hope he does great. I don't think they're going to win a Super Bowl or anything, and so whatever success he has, cool. As for Geno, as I said, look, man, I wasn't willing to commit to Geno Smith on a longer-term deal for big money. I just don't think he's that guy. So could he have some good seasons? Sure. Do I think Geno Smith is going to win you a Super Bowl? No. And my feeling was always I wanted the Seahawks to move on and get themselves into a spot where either they've got the guy or they're closer to getting the guy. And in having Sam Darnold, I don't know that he's the guy either, but at least I feel like if it doesn't work, you're a step closer to getting the guy. Now, after this Saturday, I don't know if the guy is Arch Manning. We'll wait and see whether that's the case. But there's some dudes coming out in this next year's draft between him and Sellers and the kid from Penn State. I'm not a big college football guy, so I don't really follow all that, but I know there's some dudes coming out, and if you're a year closer and a step closer to getting one of those guys, fine. I love it.
Expectations for Cooper Kupp this year, what are they?
If he's healthy, I think he's still a good player, but that's obviously a big if. I mean, he's only a couple of years removed from being one of the best players in the league. He's coming home, right? He's a Washington guy.
Of all time.
Right? <just said. laughs> And by all accounts, just a great guy. And look, I think he fits what they're trying to do. I mean, look, it's funny. You asked me about Cooper Kupp, and I'm going to go to the three wide receivers who were the last three kept: Jake Bobo, Dariq Young, and the other guy whose name I'm forgetting now, the last wide receiver. It's not really that important. It's interesting that they kept those three guys who almost made the team over Valdez-Scantling because they were better blockers. I mean, they really do seem to be pot committed to the idea of, hey, we're going to run the ball, and all 11 guys have to be a part of that. And Cody White, that's the other guy's name. And you got to be able to be a part of that. And if, you know, Valdez-Scantling wasn't, see ya. Like, we're going to find somebody else to do that job.
If Valdez-Scantling doesn't block downfield, you can count the number of snaps he's going to get with Kyle Shanahan and the 49ers on one hand, because if you're not blocking downfield,
yeah,
you cannot play wide receiver for the 49ers. That's for sure. The other wide receiver that I am very excited about up in Seattle is Jaxon Smith-Njigba. I think that he's about to have a year.
So I like him a lot. I have a weird, as I told you, I don't watch a ton of college football, but I got a coworker up here who hosts shows on our sister station, the News Talk station, and his son was a big wide receiver prospect here in Seattle, and then he went to Ohio State same year as JSN. And I was all excited to watch G. Scott Jr., who right now is on the Patriots practice squad. And I was like, okay, I'm going to watch. He's going to be great. He's now a tight end. And I think part of the reason why, and you can see it from day one, is like, wait a minute, who's that guy? Because that guy catches everything. And all of those dudes who were there at Ohio State at the time, Jaxon just always jumped off the page to me. I like Garrett Wilson. I like all of them. Like, I think they've got a lot of really great wide receivers that have come out of there. But Chris Olave is another. But he just has an interesting combination of body control, hands. He gets himself open. He's got a little Doug Baldwin to him, who we saw here. Maybe not quite as mentally antagonistic as Doug, but same kind of a player in some ways. And he does feel like he's about to pop this year. And they bet on him popping. I mean, look, they drafted him in the first round. Like, you draft a wide receiver in the first round, he's got to be a number one wide receiver. He can't be a slot guy. And so they're going to ask him to be a lot more than he's been this year.
Tell me about Mike McDonald. What don't I know about him? What should make me want to know more about him? Either a personality trait or, you know, just a scheme, a philosophy. What do you like about him, and what are you worried about?
Well, so, you know, as I said, I interviewed Pete every week for 10 years or whatever it was. Interviewing Mike every week is not the same. He does not have the same outgoing, charismatic, gregarious Pete Carroll charm.
You're pulling answers and stories out of him. He's not
a little bit. He's not like psyched to do media interviews every week. But that's a me problem. That's not a Seahawks problem. And from a Seahawks perspective, pretty interesting dude. I mean, he's young. He is really bright. I mean, he is, to the defensive side, what McVay and Shanahan and some of these guys have been on the offensive side, he's that kind of a defensive mind. It's just that the league doesn't really promote that the same way it does the offense. He's got kind of a military background, and he brings a lot of military references and military style to what he does, in a nice way, not in a over-the-top way. It's hard. You're trying to compare him to someone. There's a little bit of Belichick in that, some of the kind of droll answers and the way he thinks about defense. There's a little bit of Parcells, I think, in him, but not with the big personality, more of sort of the management of an entire group. I've yet to come up with a really good comp for who he is, and I've been working on it here for over a year. I just don't know that there is one. He's an interesting dude, though, and the players seem to like him. What I think they appreciate about him as a young coach is he's not pretending to have all the answers. He told us that this summer they hired a firm to essentially video and critique all of his speeches to the team, because he wanted to get better at it. And the team knows about it. He's not keeping it a secret. He told us about it. It kind of speaks to who he is. He doesn't put himself above everybody, partly because he's about their age. He says, look, I'm in it with you guys, and I'm learning, and I'm trying to get better. And he's really smart. They know that. But they know he's learning some of the big picture stuff. And look, following in Pete Carroll's footsteps, that's not easy. I mean, Pete was the Seattle Seahawks for whatever it was, 12, 13 right. years.
That commanded the room too. Pete was not filming his, how am I doing speaking to people? He knew he was crushing that.
That's exactly right. But Mike had a lot of decisions to make. And it's funny, one of the first things that came up in true Pete Carroll fashion, what was like the one thing that was most Pete, most specific and unique about his team meeting room? The basketball hoop. Of course, Pete's got to have a basketball hoop in the team meeting room, and they'd always use it. And it was one of the first questions I asked Mike when he got hired. You're going to keep the basketball hoop? Because there's no real, what is he going to do, keep Pete's hoop? Then he's just like he had to get rid of it, right?
Right.
And he did. And he brought his own style of how he wants some of that stuff to go, while still recognizing that much of this building was very, very fond of Pete. And his GM, John Schneider, and Pete were very close for a long time. So I think he's done a nice job of walking what could have been a very hard line, by the way. That's another reason you move on from DK Metcalf, Geno Smith, and Tyler Lockett, three guys that were Pete guys. And Geno even said he was talking to Pete throughout the year last year. Whenever things weren't going well, who would he call? Pete. Well, you can't have that if you're the head coach. So I think we're going to find out a little bit more about who Mike McDonald really is this year, now that he's got more of his guys and he's not trying to cater to a group that doesn't necessarily want to change because they were happy doing it Pete's way.
I'm guessing everyone's finally over Russell Wilson now.
Oh, man. I mean, yes, we have a lot of fun on the Russ stuff. And it's hard. I mean, well, Russ brought some really good times to Seattle. And the early version of Russ was wizard-like at times. But
quarterback.
He's not anymore.
He's not anymore, but he was for a minute there. He was on the trajectory.
He sure was. But boy, has he ever destroyed it, man, and destroyed his reputation and all of the things you hear from the teammates that were there at the time. And we got a guy named Brian Walters, who you probably don't know, but Brian was one of the, you know, fifth or sixth wide receivers on those teams. And he's come on the show a few times and guest hosted, and he's telling a story. And I'm like, what is it about Russ that so drove you crazy? And he's like, well, let me give you an example. You know, we'd be in practice and he'd throw it low or something. And, you know, you'd reach way down to get it. And every other quarterback would give you, hey, my bad. Sorry about that. And Russ instead would go, hey, might happen in a game. And he's like, you can't live with it. He's like, it was too much all the time. It was insane. It was insulting. It was selfish. And they just, it just drove them crazy.
Finally, Mike, the Mariners in grand Mariner fashion, they held off their June swoon to late August and early September here. Earlier in the year, I heard that Mariners fans were wearing sweatpants with couch cushions stuffed into the butt to, you know, pay tribute to the big dumper himself. First of all, that guy needs to pee in a cup. I'll say that. Oh, no. Anytime you see something in baseball that's never happened before, we need a drug test. That's just.
I've been asked about that a bunch, and I got to tell you, look, I'm as skeptical as anybody. I'm telling you, man.
I'll give him that.
He doesn't have the body of a roids guy. I mean, he's got a big butt, and he's not big up top. The head isn't big. He signed his contract in the offseason before all this. Like, look, I'm with you. I always am skeptical of anybody who's doing anything that shouldn't be done. But he's also wearing down. I mean, go look at the home runs and the numbers in the second half. Like,
I mean, there was nowhere to go but down. He was unbelievable. What a year.
He's a heck of a guy. You'd really like Cal. I got to tell you, of all the players I've been around, you'd really like Cal. He's just salt of the earth, good guy who doesn't really seem to want all this attention. He's embraced this ridiculous nickname that Jared Kelnick gave him a few years ago. He has fun with it. He's now making a little money off of it here. Right, exactly. And he just rolls with it. He's also been a pretty good leader. He's a commanding presence, and it's impossible to do what he does running a pitching staff and then hitting the way he's hit. He should be the MVP, I think, right now over Judge. We'll find out. But man, this team, they honestly have the best roster they've had in probably the 16 years that I've lived here. And they just can't seem to get out of their own way. Now, neither can the rest of the American League, which is nice, but I don't know. The one piece of good news for the Mariners is that they don't have Rafael Devers.
Hey, you know what? I'm telling you, it's starting to figure. He's starting to figure it out. He's starting to figure out that National League pitching, man. Devers has been pretty damn good over the last handful of weeks. He has.
How's the team been, though?
Hey, they're in the hunt, I guess. Kind of.
It is telling that the Red Sox got a lot better when he left.
Yeah. But they're going to miss Rafael Devers in the middle of that lineup once games actually start. I mean, you are the back of your baseball card, and he's turning back into that. I think it was a weird adjustment for him, and it was a little weird, and then the Giants kind of sucked all around him, and he really wasn't the biggest part of the problem. Let me wrap up with this. Are we getting a rebirth of the Seattle Supersonics this decade? Is it happening?
If you had asked me a month ago, I would have said, absolutely, it's a done deal. It's going to happen. They're going to, you know, vote on it this year. They're going to expand to Vegas and Seattle. And the Bonderman family is going to buy the team. And it's all set. And they've got the arena. The arena here is beautiful. Bonderman, who owns the Kraken, was a minority partner with the Celtics. So he was already in with the NBA crew. I would have told you, yep, done deal. Since then, last year, Bonderman passed away, and his daughter, Samantha, is now running the show, and I think she still would like to do it. I don't know if it's going to be a league issue or if it's going to eventually be, look, the Kraken aren't making as much money as they were supposed to.
They're not? I thought the Kraken were hotcakes up there.
They were, and then they weren't very good, and they haven't been all that interesting, and hockey's a new sport to a lot of folks here. As much as I love it, it's not like the norm here in Seattle, and now they're hurting as the original season ticket 3 years are starting to roll up, and I'm getting a lot of emails saying, hey, would you like season tickets? Would you like to buy season tickets? So I think there's some concern, and the prices for these franchises have skyrocketed. Yeah. And we saw what the Blazers went for, and I think all of these numbers, you're looking at it going, are you sure it pencils? And as much as I know people here desperately want the Sonics back, the league is a bad product. It's just not a good product, and I know you guys have been watching good basketball for the last decade or so, but it's just in general a bad product. The RSN money is going away, so you're entirely dependent on the national stuff. I don't know. We'll see. If you asked me a month ago, I would have said yes, definitively within a couple of years, maybe within a year. I don't know that I feel as good about it now, but within a decade, yeah, there'll be a Supersonics team back within a decade.
And I hope Sean Kemp is involved in some way, somehow. Thank you very much, Mike. It was great to catch up with you, man. You are one of the best at what you do, not just in Seattle, but anywhere, brother. So thank you so much for joining me today. And cheers. Cheers to you and Brock. Continued success.
Appreciate that. And same right back at you. Love that this whole thing is working for you, man. You're a legend, so we appreciate it.
I appreciate you, Mike. Thank you very much. Mike Salk, the king of Seattle here on Damon Bruce Plus. Awesome to have that guy. That is your Seattle insider. You needed anything. You need a restaurant recommendation. You need anything from Seattle. You go ahead, you tap into Mike Salk, you find him on Twitter. That's the guy right there. Great guy, great at what he does. So look, we got ourselves a week one matchup. We got ourselves a really interesting week one. It starts in earnest Thursday night. We got ourselves Cowboys and Eagles. Everybody's excited for the first look at football. Then we get a second look with Chiefs and Chargers coming from Oi, Tutu Bang. We're going to Brazil, baby, on Friday night. And then you got some really interesting games coming up in week one here. Again, Cardinals and Saints. It ain't sexy, but I don't know what the Cardinals are going to be, so I'm kind of interested. And I'm going to tell you, I don't know what the Saints are going to be, except the 49ers week two opponent. So you get a little scout on the next team up for the 49ers. Lions and Packers, that's obviously a big game. That's obviously, you know, Micah Parsons' debut in a Green Bay uniform. The Lions in the post, we used to have good coordinators world that they're living in. Ravens and Bills, come on. That's a monster waiting for us on Sunday Night Football. Vikings and Bears, this is the balancing act that everyone in Chicago is going to be looking at. Can Ben Johnson show he's a new age coach for the Bears' new age quarterback without getting too cute? What's that going to look like? So I am so excited that week one is here. I know you're excited week one is here. Again, Odie, what are you doing on Sunday of week one? What are you doing for lunch that day? I seriously hope you are thinking about checking out my good friend Ike of Ike Sandwiches. He's got something absolutely delicious waiting for you. You could have me waiting for you. This is me as a sandwich. Get yourself a Damon Bruce at Ike's. If you're not living around in Ike's, boy, I hope there's one opening near you soon. If you're on the West Coast, it's expanding ever eastward. So hopefully you got an Ike's coming to you. If not, call a congressman, call a senator, and make it happen. To our friends at the Dubliner West Portal, we cannot wait to see you on October 4th, Saturday, October 4th, 4:20. It's Plus Mania going down at the Dubliner. We're going to have a DJ. We're going to have an awful lot of fun there. I hope you're planning on coming into the city, Dubliner West Portal. Muni will drop you off and pick you up right out front. Can't be any easier to get to the Dubliner. We hope to see you there on October 4th at 4:20. And as I've been saying, welcome to Sleeper. It is so great to have Sleeper now here on the Plus. And I'm telling you, when you're thinking about having fun and making some investments and some outcomes this upcoming season, Sleeper picks the real money product that connects friends over picks. You choose 2 to 8 of your favorite players from pregame. You can do live. You can go across multiple sports for your player props, put them together in a parlay and see how it all pays out. Have fun, share it with your friends, get rewarded together. But most importantly, right there when it says sign up, you get a $100 deposit and a match of up to $100 when you use promo code Damon. The link is in the description of this video. You go ahead, you click on that link, you use promo code Damon and start having an awful lot of fun on Sleeper. And of course, do so responsibly at all times. Speaking of responsibility in sports, folks, we got a cheater. We got a cheater, and there's absolutely no doubt about it. The cheater's name is Steve Ballmer. The cheating franchise is the Los Angeles Clippers. And if what I heard Pablo Torre report today actually all be proven true, I think Steve Ballmer needs to be fined at least half the value of his franchise. I think Kawhi Leonard needs to be suspended for an entire NBA season because, by the way, the Clippers should be forced into the second apron of NBA tax. Pablo Torre, who seems to be the last investigative sports journalist we have working in America today, this guy is breaking a major story every other week in sports. Some of them are as meaningless as, isn't Jordan Hudson Bill Belichick's girlfriend kind of a pain in the ass? Yes. And he is uncovering things that the NFLPA has covered up, and he's gotten action based on his reports. And what we're seeing coming out of the NBA today is nothing short of one of the biggest scandals in NBA history. If this all is proven true, Pablo Torre is reporting that the Clippers and Steve Ballmer basically invented a $28 million a year no-show job for Kawhi Leonard. The way that, how dare anyone call me during the show? The way that Alabama used to pay players $20,000 to water a picket fence. You're not even watering a tree. We need you to water a picket fence. And if you water this picket fence, you get $20,000. This was when you had to get clever paying players. NIL means we don't have to get that clever anymore. You can just do it. To circumvent the salary cap, basically. This would be the equivalent of Jed York saying, hey, because of the salary cap, Juwan Jennings, we can't give you any more money. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to buy you a house in Atherton. I'm going to buy you a $15 million house in Atherton, and that's not going to apply to the salary cap, but you're definitely getting some value for that. And so there we go. We're working around it. This is like how Carmen Policy and Eddie DeBartolo used to fluff dudes before the salary cap era And, you know, oh, what do you need to sign here? Do you need a Ferrari? Do you need two Ferraris? Well, that can all get worked out in the wash. This has been happening. I'm guessing every single owner in sports right now is doing some level of personal inventory to make sure that they're not exposed to something like this being revealed about them or their franchise or their organization. Kawhi Leonard should be suspended for the whole fucking year, and Steve Ballmer should be fined a dollar amount in the hundreds of millions. Because if you give Steve Ballmer a $10 million fine, that is Steve Ballmer flipping a nickel to take care of that. That means nothing to Steve Ballmer. He should have to sell. He should have to pay a fine that is worth half of his franchise. If the Clippers are worth $3-5 billion, Steve Ballmer should get a $2.5 billion fine for what he just did. This should be a warning shot across the bow of not just every NBA owner, but every owner in sports. To a capped sport, you can't do this. This is sports crime. This is criminal. Obviously, he's not. It's not criminal behavior, but you are breaking a level of established rules that make you no different than a criminal coming in to rob you of your assets. These sneaky bastards. How long have they been getting away with it? How long has Kawhi Leonard been paid under the table to pay for the Clippers, not counting against the salary cap, so they can round out their roster? And here's the beautiful thing, too. You're still the Clippers. No matter how hard you try, no matter how hard you're trying to cheat, you're still the Clippers. You still mean nothing in the world of what's important in sports. You're just the fucking Clippers. And your Intuit Dome can blink all it wants to. And you can have a big wall of fans all you want to. You're just the Clippers. And not even Steve Ballmer's money, new stadium, cheating, no amount of good coaching from Ty Lue will ever change the fact you're the fucking Clippers. And you can't even matter in a post-Loy Vaught world. Without Loy Vaught, you're all jokes. Shout out Loy Vaught. Shout out Loy Vaught. Did you think you were getting that today when you clicked on this thumbnail about the Seahawks and Niners? Did you think you were getting Loy Vaught shout outs? This is why you got to subscribe to the channel, folks. You never know where it's coming. Bucko Sports says everybody pay under the table. So if you're saying everybody needs to pay under the table to keep up with the Clippers, that's the point. So this needs to be rooted out as if it were evil being stomped out of the church. And if you're also saying there, hey, this is happening everywhere, then everyone needs to be crucified who is involved in this. I want straight up crucifixions on the side of the street for me to be able to walk past and throw rotten cabbage at. This is cheating. This isn't clever bookmaking. This isn't working around a salary. This is cheating as much as you can cheat. So fuck you, Steve Ballmer, and your Clippers. Why did Seattle decide to sign Darnold? Why? He's a placeholder. Dan Mab. Dan Mab. I think he's a placeholder. I think he's a quality placeholder. I think he's the kind of guy that they know they can bring in, give a shot to. If it doesn't work out, no big whoop. You walk away, you go to your rook, and everyone's going to feel good about it. I think that Sam Darnold was just a safe decision to make that might make you a little bit better. And if it doesn't work out, it's a lateral move. I think Sam Darnold played pretty well last year, and we're going to find out if that was Kevin O'Connell and the Vikings or if it was Sam Darnold really resuscitating his own career. It'll be interesting. It'll be very, very interesting. So, screw you, Kawhi Leonard, Steve Ballmer. Thank you, San Francisco Giants, for giving us something to watch over the last couple nights to see if they can keep it up. Giants actually playing decent baseball. We got a bench clearer last night. That was fun. Okay, sure, I'll take it. I want to thank Mike Salk for joining us today. He was fantastic getting you ready for a little 49ers and Seahawks. And the only thing we have left to do today is talk about what happened today in history. We always start, as you know, with our birthdays. Happy 62nd birthday to author Malcolm Gladwell. He wrote Outliers. He wrote Tipping Point. He hosts a very good and interesting podcast. This is an intellectual. This is an interesting guy, Malcolm Gladwell, 62 years old today. Less of an intellectual and more of a party boy. Happy 60th birthday to Charlie Sheen, who nearly killed himself when he adopted Brian Wilson's personality with the whole winning Tiger's blood. Charlie Sheen became Brian Wilson, former closer of the San Francisco Giants. The two of them befriended at a spring training. Charlie Sheen squatted on Brian Wilson's personality, and this was when the whole Charlie Sheen, Tiger Blood, winning goddesses, mental public breakdown happened. You don't want to try to be Brian Wilson unless you're Brian Wilson. By the way, happy 39th birthday to what they call him, the Flying Tomato himself. Snowboarder, Olympic snowboarder, Sean White turns 39 today. Let's see. Today in 1189, Richard the Lionheart, which, by the way, of all the, you know, what's your name? Call me Richard the Lionheart. You sound important right there. Well, he was. He became the King of England and was crowned as such today at Westminster Abbey in 1189. We fast forward, about 600 years down the road, 1777 at Cooch's Bridge. Cooch's Bridge in Newark, Delaware. There was an early skirmish of the American Revolutionary War that took place, and for the first time ever, the flag of the United States was flown in battle at the Cooch's Bridge today in 1777. First time Old Glory ever went to battle. Today in 1813, speaking of historical American things, today Uncle Sam was seen for the very first time in Troy, New York. Troy, New York, this tiny little town in upstate New York, part of New York's Rust Belt, is where the character Uncle Sam was invented, and today he was dropped. So they dropped their Uncle Sam album for the first time today in 1813 in Troy, New York. Let's see. Oh, we'll go way back. I should have had this one because I like to go in chronological order. This should have been even before that, because today in 1609, an English navigator named Henry Hudson, looking for a path to India from the Dutch East India Company, he sailed into the harbor of what is present-day New York City and went up this body of water that did not lead him to India as much as it led him to being the man who discovered, and they named it after him, the Hudson River. The Hudson River, Henry Hudson, today, 1609. There you go. The world's first working all-electric television was debuted today in 1928 by Philo Farnsworth right here in San Francisco. First ever demonstration of a working electronic television happened in San Francisco. I didn't know that. I did not know that. This is, I guess, appropriate because we all know what starts this week. Well, today in 1970, Coach Vince Lombardi, who became a national symbol of single-minded pursuit of excellence, winning isn't a sometimes thing, it's an all-the-time thing. Today, in 1970, at the age of only 57, Vince Lombardi died. Only 57 for Vince Lombardi. By the way, you know, that's just 7 years for me. I'll be 57 in 7 years. Go look at a picture of me. I don't think I look young, especially with all the gray. But look at me. Look at a picture of Vince Lombardi and tell me that that guy's only 7 years older than I am right now? They made men differently back then. Men aged differently than they do now. That's for sure. That's for sure. Let's see. We don't often talk about music in today in history, but I got to tell you, it's one of the favorite songs of my childhood. It came out when I was 8 years old today, September 3rd, 1980. I guess it reached number one today, but Sweet Dreams Are Made of These by the Eurythmics came out. What a great song. I'm going to tell you that my boys, a six-year-old and four-year-old, love Annie Lennox and Dave Stewart and the Eurythmics because of Sweet Dreams Made of These. I think it was like in a Trolls movie or something. But as soon as they heard that song, Jack's like, I know this song. I know this song from an animated movie. So that's good. They're putting the Eurythmics in front of the kids. That's good. Because when I was 8 years old in 1983, that song was dope. I mean, I'd never heard anything like that. That was awesome. The first time I ever heard Sweet Dreams Are Made of These, great song. Great song. Annie Lennox, still getting it done. Even Otis knows. This song's a classic. It really is. Damon, are you sponsored by the History Channel now? They'd be lucky. There's probably more people watching me than the History Channel right now, so they'd be lucky to sponsor this segment. By the way, I didn't know about this until I looked this up. Today, September 3rd, 1985, 40 years ago, you know what dropped? An atomic bomb. Teddy Ruxpin. 40 years ago today, Teddy Ruxpin came out. My sister had a Teddy Ruxpin. I used to put my Run DMC Raising Hell cassette tape in the Teddy Ruxpin. And then Teddy Ruxpin would be like Run DMCing it. It was awesome. As soon as I found out that Teddy Ruxpin, his mouth moves to whatever cassette you put in there, I didn't use any Teddy Ruxpin tapes anymore. Teddy Ruxpin, Run DMC Teddy. It was my guy. Teddy Ruxpin was fucking huge, by the way. It was the number one selling toy of 1985 and 1986. Like, this thing gave Cabbage Patch Kids all the run for its money they could have ever wanted. Today in 1992, Australia had a show on network television that I guess was based off of America's Funniest Home Videos, but Australia went with Australia's Naughtiest Home Videos. It was supposed to be an hour-long program. The network canceled Australia's Naughtiest Home Videos 34 minutes into the hour, and everyone involved was fired. I don't know what they showed, what the naughtiest videos consisted of. I didn't even know about this today until I was putting this segment together. But there was a show called Australia's Naughtiest Videos that was canceled 34 minutes into it actually running, which is also something I've never heard of before. So that's how naughty that was. They shut that thing down as it was happening. Finally, today in 2012, have you ever seen the documentary Cocaine Cowboys? It is fantastic. One of the best documentaries you'll ever watch, called Cocaine Cowboys. Don't watch the Cocaine Cowboys Reloaded. The original Cocaine Cowboys documentary is what I want you to watch. And it's all about Griselda Blanco. Griselda Blanco moved more powder in the United States than any man ever did. This woman was the angel of death. She was the godmother of cocaine. She had people murdered indiscriminately. She was Scarface. Well, Griselda Blanco finally got what was coming to her today. She was fatally shot in Medellin, Colombia. Again, tell me you're in the cocaine business by getting shot to death in Medellin, Colombia. Thank you, Griselda. That happened today in 2012. What I hope also happens today is for you to hit like and subscribe. I hope you check out Ike's. I hope you check out our good friends at the Dubliner West Portal. I hope you plan on checking out Sleeper and get a $100 deposit up to $100 match when you use promo code Damon. By the way, click on the link in the description in this video, and boom, you're taken care of when you use promo code Damon. Thank you so much for watching today. We had a great wake up with yours truly, Kruger and Sammy. Sammy will be back with me on Thursday. We're cooking up some guests as the NFL season unfolds. It's so good to finally have it back. It's great to have you here. And again, help me reach our channel goal of 50,000 subs by the bye week. And I'm going to need you to hit like, subscribe. I'm going to need you to select notify. But more importantly, I'm going to need you to tell a friend about this. Tell a neighbor, tell an enemy. Check out Damon Bruce Plus on YouTube. Thank you all so very much for being a part of this. You are my kind of people, each and every one of you. Remember, our next Plus Mania, October 4th, Saturday, October 4th, 4:20. Hope to see you at the Dubliner West Portal. In the meantime, thank you very much. And please do remember that sports don't build character. They reveal.